New Year's Eve, 1915. This time last year, he was seeing me off at Charing Cross Station. And I had just begun to realize that I loved him. Today, he is lying in the military cemetery at Louvaincourt, because a week ago, he was wounded in action and had just 24 hours of consciousness more and then went to sleep in France. And I, who in impatience felt a fortnight ago that I could not wait another minute to see him, must wait till all eternity. At midnight on December the 22nd, his platoon was preparing to repair the wire in front of the trench, and Roland went out first to see if all was safe. Evidently the Germans must have seen him, for they opened fire almost at once. He fell, and his company commander and platoon sergeant went out immediately and carried him back into the trench. In less than 6 hours, the doctor had Roland in the hospital clearing station, 10 miles away. At 10, he had a severe operation, but the chances of recovery were very remote. He died, quite peacefully, at 11 p.m. I cannot feel he is dead. And when I remember his closeness to me on that Sunday evening on the cliff at Lowestoft, I feel it will be impossible always.
France, 8th of January, 1916. Dear Miss Britton, please pardon me for writing to you. I am very, very sorry. May you be helped through this terrible time. There are times, I know, when letters are but empty things. Yours sincerely, Geoffrey Thurlow.
Dear Edward, yesterday I was suddenly presented with another night off duty, so I immediately went over to Keymer. I arrived at a very opportune, though very awful, moment. All Roland's things had just been sent back from the front. It was terrible. Mrs. Layton and Claire were both crying bitterly, as on the day we heard of his death. Everything was damp and worn, and simply caked with mud. There was his cap, bent in and shapeless out of recognition, the soft cap he wore rakishly on the back of his head. He must have fallen on top of it, or perhaps one of the people who fetched him in trampled on it. We discovered that the bullet was an expanding one. The hole where it went in the front was almost microscopic, but at the back, almost exactly where his backbone would have been, there was quite a large rent. The charnel house smell seemed to grow stronger and stronger till it pervaded the room and obliterated everything else. Finally, Mrs. Layton said, "Robert, take these clothes away into the kitchen and don't let me see them again. Either burn or bury them. They smell of death. They are not Roland. They even seem to detract from his memory and spoil his glamour. Even all the little things had the same faint smell. There was his haversack crammed full of letters. There was the box of cigarettes you gave him recently. The socks Mother knitted him. The pen and pipe and book I gave him. Among his letters, there was one which interested me very much. It was written in the summer, before he came home on leave, and concerns contributions and details for the Catholic Journal. It shows Roland to have been a confessed and acknowledged Roman Catholic all that time ago, but he never said anything to us about it when he was home. I think he imagined I should have disapproved. But, most important of all, a private exercise book containing some poems of his own, 7 of them. They are mostly love lyrics, and I read them with a queer inward exultation over what his death has revealed. Hederville is perhaps the most wonderful of them all."
The sunshine on the long white road that ribboned down the hill, the velvet clematis that clung around your window sill, are waiting for you still. Again the shadow.